Welcome to Microbyte. My name is Gavin Clark, software editor for The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, editor of the All About Microsoft blog on ZDNet.
Just for this show, Microsoft killed its hipster social networking phone, The Kid, just 6 weeks after it's launched. So we ask, can Microsoft's mobile strategy recover? And is the death of Kid a good thing for Windows Phone 7? On Windows 8, the goals have been leaked, from tablets to fast boot. Are we looking at a winner with the next version of Windows, or is it going to be an own goal? And finally, what does this all mean for partners? We take a look at what Microsoft's going to be saying at the show, which is one of Microsoft's biggest, with more than 10,000 attendees and possibly one of its most influential events. And in what's been a tough week for Microsoft, we also look at how Steve's handling it all. MJ, so death of kin. How many headlines can you get out of that? No, time to notify your next of kin.
there's a limitless amount, Gavin.
I really had to control myself on the headline this week. So the kin, for those people who might not even have heard about it, the word is it's a pretty good chance they hadn't heard about it. About 500 phones have been sold in 6 weeks. The Kin was Microsoft's social networking phone. It was designed to have about four applications on board, which would kind of rate your tweets, your Facebooks, your contacts. It would kind of, it was supposed to be an easy way of sharing photos with people and taking photos. And also it would back up your tweets and your comments and your text. It would back them up to a cloud service. And you had two handy handsets, Kin 1 and Kin 2. They initially sold them for, I think, about, what was it, $49.99 and $99.99 for the phones. And then you had to buy a dialing plan, a data plan, then you had to buy a voice plan as well from the US carrier Verizon. The Kin was due to arrive in Europe in the summer, but suddenly, just 6 weeks into the phone, Microsoft killed it. And you've got to wonder why, what's going on with that. Quite possibly, well, it's definitely the shortest product lifespan in the history of Microsoft, which was quite interesting. It makes you wonder what's going on there. Personally, for my money, I think it was a strategic failure on Microsoft's part. And I think a lot of people are going to be wondering why they launched this product, why they bothered to launch something they killed 6 weeks later, especially investors and people who are invested in the company will be wondering what's going on. Also, I think it's going to raise some questions about Microsoft's management, if they're kind of like pushing product out there and killing them 6 weeks after they've launched them. So that's kind of some interesting stuff that's going on with that. The other major theme, of course, is what does it mean for the Windows Phone 7? You know, Microsoft had three smartphone options, Windows Phone 6.5, it has Windows Phone 7 yet to come, and then it had the Kin kicking around. It was confusing the market, so now it's taken one phone option out of play, so potentially things are a little clearer now. But MJ, I wonder what are you kind of thinking of the death of Kin after such a short period of time?
Yeah, I think it was killed even more quickly than Microsoft Bob, which might have had the previous record. Really? Of shortest product life cycle. You know, my biggest takeaway from it all is, how did it ever actually come to market? It's one of those products, when you were tracing along with the history as it was evolving, when it was codenamed Pink, yeah. You knew there was a lot of problems that were happening just because of different leaks that were coming out, and there was a lot of dissension among the team. I kept getting different leaks when it was being developed. Sometimes it was like, yeah, it's on again. Yeah, it's off. No, they killed it. Nope, it's back. Now it's just going to be services. Now it's going to be a phone. It's like, okay, there's some really dysfunctional thing happening here in this project. Mm. So I was kind of surprised it actually ever came to market, because I was actually thinking almost right up till the Kin launch that they were going to kill it. The other interesting question is, which came first, Robbie Bach and Jay Allard leaving, or the decision to kill the Kin?
Yeah.
Was Robbie the fall guy for this thing, and this was kind of like the last straw? He wasn't let go over Red Ring of Death on the Xbox, but maybe this was just the final thing that they just like, Robbie, I think it's time for you to retire, big guy. I think those are all really interesting questions, and ones we don't totally know the answers to, though maybe they'll come out at some point. But I think it's good. I think it's good news for Windows Phone 7 because now, like you said, Gavin, there's one fewer option that people have to think about and be confused about.
Yeah.
But if I were a Microsoft partner or customer, I think I'd be a little nervous right now. Because it, you know, do you want to buy a Windows Phone 7 right out of the gate, or do you want to make sure all of the models are going to stay in the market before anything shakes out and something gets killed?
Yeah, so
it does raise a lot of questions about management. It raises a lot of questions about how much money did they lose on this, because they had a pretty massive TV and advertising, both print and online, campaign for this. That, you know, they made a big deal out of the fact that even before they started building this phone, they went out and surveyed something like 50,000 people. I mean, they spent a lot of money doing the kin.
What I don't understand, and we're seeing more of this from Microsoft, they're doing this especially around Internet Explorer. They're trying to, they're doing a lot of this around, well, they are doing it around Internet Explorer, and they're doing this around Bing. They're hitting us with a lot of data points to kind of justify features and new products and services. But how can they go out and survey so many people on a phone and get it so wrong? I mean, it's really mind-boggling for a company that's 35 years old, supposed to have mature management, and is very good at like spotting new markets and making money, that they can come up with something like this. In the piece I wrote, I called it the curse of Zune, because Zune went through exactly the same process of it was one thing, then it was another thing. It was also it was on, then it was off. And then it was also, the final throw was, it was described as the next generation of digital music, which is more or less the same wording they used for the kin. They described it as the next generation of the social phone. It's like somebody's either given up caring in Microsoft development, the Microsoft product development, and in the Microsoft messaging people, and they just put out stuff that's cookie cutter. I mean, the kin, the development and the messaging around kin, to me, seemed to mirror pretty much the stuff around Zune. And when it comes to a strategic concept, it's like the kin was going to marry cloud services. The phone was almost an afterthought. It was a way of touching the cloud, but all your tweets and your pictures and your IMs, everything would be uploaded and bounced around the cloud. Whereas which was kind of the same concept with the Zune, which was, we're going to surround this music player with a lot of cloud and sharing and social networking services. But it just seemed, the hardware didn't stand up, and it seemed like people actually do quite like a nice piece of hardware in their hand, if I may put it that way. And they're still not ready for that conceptual jump to, just put everything in the cloud. You know, and Microsoft seems to be gambling heavily again on, it's the cloud, just put it all in the cloud, our services, and the customers aren't interested. Or to the point where they want to be.
I think it is going to be an interesting thing to see if the kin ends up being all services. Exactly what you're saying, Gavin, like Zune started out as a device, and now Zune is only going to be services going forward, unless they still do the rumored Zune HD2, which is more like an iPod Touch. I don't know if that is off the table now or still on. But, everybody's asking are they going to continue some of the good things that were part of kin? Because there were a couple things people actually did like. For example, the kin studio, which is all the cloud backup and store all your pictures and your data in the cloud so that you don't have to keep it all local on your phone. And if you lose the phone, you still have access to it, that kind of thing. Also the kin loop, which was kind of like a constant feed of different information that you wanted pushed to you from your friends, like their tweets, their Facebook status, and all that. I mean, if they continue those kind of things, then it wasn't a complete wash and they didn't lose 500 million or a billion or whatever they're going to take a hit on with the kin. But if they don't carry those things forward in some way, they just lost a lot of money on something that's giving them a pretty big black eye.
Yeah, I've got to think, like the kin, like the Zune, you'll see some of those services appear in Windows Phone 7. But then, who knows? There's so the Windows Phone 7 story is still unclear. There's so much we know that you can't do with a phone. Like, I wrote a piece this week about the first database that will be available, that will come from a third-party partner. Well, as we all know, Microsoft has not allowed databases on the Windows Phone 7 because to be exposed to third parties, because it wants to keep the phone completely locked down. So what I think is also interesting, taking a separate point, something that's interesting at Microsoft is that it's a very classic, the Microsoft's model of operating here seems to be, right, that failed, we're going to sweep all the people who worked on that project into a new project or into another project team, regardless of the merits of that team, it seems, or the merits of the project they worked on. It's almost like, you know, Microsoft's becoming an almost like a job for life. Mm-hmm. There's people who come up with bad ideas and bad execution aren't being moved out and moved on. So the problem is kind of like brushed into another product division. So the same problem exists. And this happened with the Zoom, like you say, it was on, it was off, and then it was moved around. So Microsoft, in a way, can't bring itself to kill ideas. It has to let them live on with people who move into other divisions, so you end up with these awful hybrids, which is what we have, and I feel ultimately rob the products that do emerge of some kind of credibility and sort of cool factor.
Well, the other interesting kind of side story that went along with the whole death of kin is now what's going to happen in terms of management of the Windows Mobile division, because as we know right now, Steve Ballmer's actually managing it himself before he decides who's going to be the new head of it. And so far, the one who's in the lead as far as rumors go is Steven Sinofsky to take over the mobile division. And
is that still a hot rumor? Because I know we talked about that previously, and it was you know, it was kind of, that was about last December or November, I think we first reported that.
Yep, it was. And if you looked at some of the coverage that was done around the kin demise, the part of it that's coming back again is this talk that mobile might go to Sinofsky. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of an interesting idea, because, you know, right now he's seen as the golden guy at Microsoft and everything he touches works and Lucky 7 and all that kind of stuff. But I think he's got a lot on his plate already. And if they give him mobile too, aren't they just kind of perpetuating the same people running at the organization who may not be experts in the part of the business that they're running? I mean, to me, I think they need to bring in a mobile person to run mobile if they're not going to give it to Andy Lees and they're going to give it to somebody above Lees.
Yeah. They definitely need to. I think if you look at Windows Phone 7, it's such a different code base to what's going on the client. It would be a very hard. It's not like those products are identical, you know, which would be add some logic. They're completely different products.
Yeah. Yep. But that's a good segue into our second story here, Gavin.
Indeed.
About Windows 8.
Windows 8. MJ, do you want to talk a little about that? There was some interesting, some news came out on that, didn't it, prior to our show?
It did. And part of the reason that you made me think of Windows 8 was your last point about the whole idea of, you know, the synergies or non-synergies between the Windows platform and the phone platform. So let's go back to the beginning on Windows 8. So Windows 8, which until this week, Microsoft was trying to get us to call Windows version next because they kept saying maybe it's not really going to be called Windows 8. We know now, based on a leak of some documents that seem to have come through HP in some way, based on the watermark on them, the next version of Windows is Windows 8. It's going to have, if they stick to this plan, which is unlikely that everything will stay in it, but if they do stick to plan, it's going to really show that Microsoft has a lot of Apple envy. Mm-hmm. It's supposedly going to have a Windows App Store included in it. It's also going to supposedly be targeted at slates as one of the primary form factors. Mm-hmm. I wonder where that's coming from. some of the other features that were in these leaked slides that were interesting were something that was called a reset button, like a factory reset button. Yeah. It would be a one-push button that would allow you to do a reinstallation of Windows, but still maintaining all your personal files, apps, and settings. So, in other words, if things get really screwed up, you hit the reset button, and it doesn't have to wipe all your apps and your data. It'll just reinstall Windows from scratch. Mm-hmm. Wow, that would be awesome if they can do that. Something probably every Windows user really wants.
This is kind of crazy, isn't it? I mean, it's the mission of failure. Six months after you buy a Windows PC, you know it's going to start dragging like a dog, and you already want to buy your next PC. Whereas, I hate to say it, I'm not a fanboy, as a disclaimer here, but you can have a Mac running for 3 years, and it still performs as well as the first day you got it out of the box. And I know people are going to say, well, because Apple controls the hardware, but you know, what can Microsoft do? That's where Microsoft should be focusing its goals, is to address some of these performance issues with its partners. Rather than just dumping in the ripcord, which is like pull here in emergency.
Well, I really like the idea of this push button reset thing, and partially it is to me a performance enhancement, because you know the whole thing that happens to Windows PCs: the longer you run them, you get what people call Windows rot.
Yep.
They get slower and slower. I mean, it would be really great if an easy solution to that was, okay, just push the button if your PC starts slowing down, and you can kind of go back to your original Windows installation, but still not have to reinstall all your apps and lose all your data. That would be great. It would be a performance enhancement for me. The other performance enhancement that's on the leaked slides that, wow, man, I hope they can pull this off too, is the fast startup, because, you know, they promised that with Windows 7. Well, they first promised it with Vista, and it really didn't pan out there. Windows 7, it's better, but it's still definitely nowhere near instant on. It's no iPad, right? You don't push a button and Windows is on. So exactly how that's going to work. They talked about it somehow, combining like boot and shutdown and making it kind of like making it appear that your log off and hibernate are somehow happening more quickly. I didn't quite follow the whole explanation on that, but, it's like behind the curtain, there's something happening, but it's going to make it all boot way faster, which will be great. I just wanted to boot faster. What else was on the deck? IE9 is going to be the built-in browser. We kind of figured that.
Big surprise.
Yeah. Support for facial recognition as one of the ways you log in, which I don't find very comforting, but some people do because they hate passwords, and they said, wow, it'd be awesome if I could just sit in front of my PC and it saw it was me, and then I was safely logged on. Mm. So this was a slide deck that came out, and as we know, Microsoft was not anywhere near ready to talk about Windows 8 yet, because one of Steven Sinofsky's missions when he came into Windows was to stop the early leaks, because it leads to partner and customer dissatisfaction. Because as we know, this is a super early list, and some of these things are probably not going to make it into the first version of the product when it comes to beta, probably next year. And people will be like, hey, whatever happened to face recognition? You guys said you were going to have that.
Yeah.
Microsoft didn't confirm these were real slides, but again, because of the watermark on them, and also the fact they didn't deny they were real slides, I think it's pretty safe to say they are actual early slides about what Microsoft hoped to have in Windows 8 when it finally comes to market in either 2011, 2012, or whenever that is.
I mean, it's interesting to see what they will achieve if these goals hold up and what we'll get in terms of features. I mean, it says to me we're looking at another pretty safe operating system. You know, the focus on fast start. You know, what else we got there? It's following Apple tablet. It was notable from the slides that we saw that it calls out the form factor of the tablet, or the slate as they call it, as being the third form factor, the other two being laptop and one, the other one being strangely, I think it's called a hybrid of two, which is a bit weird, which I take all in one PC, which I guess they mean is a regular PC or not, who knows. So the fact that they're actually figuring the slate form factor into this is significant, but you know, following Microsoft, what can you do with an operating system that's kind of old? I mean, they're going to try and refresh it with some with obviously the cloud services, like you said, and the App Store, which is kind of a, you know, and it's, but you know, downloading Windows apps and installing them. Who, you know, how many people do that? How many people download an app to their PC and install it? It's, you know, it can be a risky proposition for people. Apps, you know, don't install as simply on the PC as well as they do on the Mac, because of where the files are allocated and the directory systems. But is that a big goal? Clearly, Vista was the operating system that Microsoft set out as being the big visionary direction for the future, but it turned out setting big vision milestones didn't work out terribly well for the company, and it had to become more of a follower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the whole App Store thing is going to be real interesting from a couple of perspectives. One is, like you're saying, you know, is it going to be just another version of like that digital BitLocker thing they had, you know, where it's buy an app and it downloads and installs on your machine? Or is it going to be more like the App Store from Apple, where, you know, there's some web apps featured in there, and there's free apps, there's paid apps, there's a few business apps. And, you know, then the second part of that question is, how does a Windows App Store compare or contrast or overlap with what's going to be Windows Phone Marketplace? You know, because for Apple, you've got the iPad, iPhone, and a lot of the apps are the same, you know, that work on both platforms. Will that be the case with Microsoft? Right now, that sure is not the case. Mm-hmm. Because as we know, the apps that are going to be in the Windows Phone Marketplace for Windows Phone 7 are either going to be built on Silverlight or built on the XNA platform if they're games. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case with Windows apps. I mean, it's right now, if you think what kind of Windows apps are out there, you don't really necessarily think primarily of Silverlight apps or XNA apps. You think of apps that are designed around, you know, the Win32 APIs using Windows Presentation Foundation and all that. So does this mean that there's going to be different categories of apps and kind of different levels of support from Microsoft for different kinds of apps? I mean, I can't see them saying, like, okay, no more CAD CAM apps. We're done with that, you know. but then what do you do with the marketplace for something like that, you know?
Well, the question is, where like, I think is what you're hitting on here, is where do the partner apps come from? And do you have partners building either just, you know, App Store-enabled versions of their existing applications, or completely different applications, as you said, are web-based, and to for partners to build App Store-enabled versions of their applications, they're going to want to see some market share. They'll want to see some other people up there first before they get up there. It's not going to be that easy. I was doing a quick add up on numbers a little while back, and one of the early business App Store companies was Salesforce with its App Exchange, which is a few years old now. And I don't know if I couldn't believe my eyes when I read this, but they've only got about 1,000 apps up there right now, and they've been pushing pretty hard on the whole idea of business apps that you download, or you don't download, but you install in your instance of Salesforce. So, you know, it's the business market is going to be tough. You know, the consumer market might be easier conceivably, but then, as I said, it comes down to who's going to be building those apps, who's going to take the lead, who are going to be the first people in there taking the risk on this version, who's going to commit the R&D development to build these products for this App Store. It's just, you know, it's curious. It's an example of a company trying to set a stake in the ground and hoping people are going to rally around it. But, you know, in some ways, you've got to kind of turn this thing around. You've got to see them. You've got to see that the market, the apps out there in the field, first of all, and then maybe and put a store around them to create some kind of critical mass. You know, every time Microsoft tries to do this kind of cloud services approach, it kind of struggles, and we end up with situations like, you know, like the Zune, where it tries to force the whole idea of things are more social, we're downloading more stuff these days, and the reality doesn't really pan out, and you have to can the product because the online services didn't materialize. And that's happened before. That happened with Vista, didn't it, where you had supposed to have the add-on enhancements which never fully materialized.
Yes. What were those called again? I'm forgetting.
Yeah.
I've mentally blocked that entire product and related products.
I think we've all moved on to a better place since Vista.
Yes. So
speaking of moving on, let's look ahead. Now, a lot of these kind of currents and product discussions are going to feed into Worldwide Partner Conference, which is happening next week in Washington, D.C. It's going to be like more than 10,000 people there. It's, you know, these are the people who, for Microsoft, really are important. I mean, obviously, all people are important for Microsoft. Developers are important, you know, everyone's important, but the developers build the product, you know, but it comes down to the partners who sell this stuff. It's the channel who sell this stuff. Microsoft success has been squarely founded on the channel. So MJ, you've been taking a look at some of the sessions and what's on the agenda over there. What are you seeing? What should we be looking out for at partner conference?
Yeah, Gavin, I like the partner conference every year because this is where, if you kind of listen between the lines, you can figure out what Microsoft's going to do and going to push in the coming fiscal year. And it's always interesting to see, like, who's keynoting, who's not keynoting. So I know on the first day, they've got Ballmer, of course, and they've also got Stephen Elop and Bob Muglia all keynoting. But who's not keynoting is Stephen Sanofsky. Mm. Instead, they've got Tammy Riller in his place, who's like the business manager for Windows Client. So, I mean, we weren't really expecting them to talk Windows 8 at Partner, but I think this is a proof point. Like, they're probably not going to talk about Windows 8 yet, even though they're going to get a lot of questions about it, I'm sure. Yeah. You know, they're going to talk probably about the new service pack for Windows 7, Service Pack 1, because I think the public beta should be ready right around the time of the partner conference. And the same for the Windows Server 2008 R2 service pack. They're going to be talking a lot about the cloud. This whole show's theme is like, we're all in that whole cloud thing they're doing. And, yeah. This is an audience they really, really need to evangelize the cloud to, their partners, because they're the ones who have really felt the brunt of Microsoft moving into the managed services business, because a lot of their partners were in that same business themselves. You know, like people who do hosted Exchange and hosted SharePoint and all that. And so these kind of customers are there to hear how Microsoft's going to promise them not to eat their lunch, even though they're already kind of eating their lunch. They're going to try to get more partners on board selling Azure and working with the customer bases they have to port applications to Azure and get people to think about making new applications for the cloud. I bet we're going to hear some private cloud stuff because Microsoft really hasn't talked that much about that still in terms of, you know, what do you do if you aren't ready to go public cloud and you still want to have your applications available in a cloud-like configuration but on-premises. So I'm sure we're going to hear more about that. I hear we're going to hear more about a project they talked about back at the PDC called Project Sydney. Project Sydney is some kind of an IPv6 secure tunneling solution that lets you actually have a secure connection between your on-premises apps and your cloud apps. So I think somewhat along the lines of what Amazon's done with the virtual private cloud offering they have, but with a Microsoft twist on it. I think we're going to hear more about that because that's something I'm sure partners would be able to sell to customers who aren't quite ready to make a jump directly into the public cloud or even the Microsoft hosted cloud. So yeah, cloud is going to be the big theme there. And day two, they're also going to talk more about the partner program itself because they're making a lot of changes to that program, you know, as far as changing how people get their certifications and how many people you have to have certified to get different levels of status. They're doing away with this whole gold and all that kind of criteria and replacing it with some new nomenclature. Right. And I think you probably heard this, but Allison Watson, who's been heading up Microsoft's partner program for years, like probably close to a decade or longer, has recently decided she's not going to stay in that role and she's going to switch jobs with John Roskill. John Roskill's been running the business and marketing organization at Microsoft, so they're just going to do a job flip. And so day two is going to be like, here's John Roskill, your new partner man, and here's all the changes we're making to the program, and we hope you guys stay our partners as we go through a tumultuous period here as far as products.
Well, it's an interesting transition. You know, whenever there's a great strategic change anywhere in any event, you know, you have to question whether the people who were there in preceding that change are the best people to lead a change into the new world. So it'd be interesting to see. Not knocking Allison, she's a very energized and very kind of like positive, I think, person for the channel, and she's definitely proved herself there. But it'd be interesting to see how John can actually, well, as they say, execute on the channels move into the cloud, because from what I can see, the channel boys pretty much see the cloud as a threat to their business model. And also, Microsoft hasn't really explained to them how they can make money out of the channel, and out of the cloud, unless maybe they become service providers. And even in that that example, it's not again clear how they can make money off of something like Windows as a Service.
I know. Yeah, I'm really interested to hear the Azure part, because it's not something I think of when I think of partner selling a solution. You know, because the way Microsoft's been selling Azure so far is more direct. Like, there aren't a lot of partners out there right now who are trying to get Azure evangelized to their customer base. At least not that I've heard a lot about. So. Yeah. They're going to have to put some financial incentives in place to get them to want to do this, obviously, and some licensing incentives, and basically make it more clear to them, you know, what their role is in this, because it's, you know, Azure hasn't really been out there all that long. It's been out there commercially since February, but I think it's something partners kind of look at as a side thing at this point. And I think it's more obvious how they can make money, or should be able to make money, selling things like BPOS, you know, the Business Productivity Online Suite, because that's a little clearer. But Azure being more of a development platform, the question is, you know, as a partner, what do you do with that?
Indeed, it's asking partners to take a huge leap of faith. And I'm not buying the numbers that Microsoft's been putting out in terms of Azure adoption. What are they saying? Like 10,000 customers, yeah. I think is the number they give. Well, yeah, that's really, you know, those numbers are incredibly suspect. I mean, Microsoft often goes out and it evangelizes reliable customers to get online. It goes through the customer panels and relation boards and asks them to kind of, you know, go online. So these are people who are pretty much close to Microsoft anyway, and then you have to wonder how much those customers are actually companies rather than individuals, because obviously a lot of people piled in and got Azure test accounts, so Microsoft hasn't been terribly clear on how much those Azure users are actually organizations or individuals. And a lot of people have been doing that in the last few years, trying to kind of like be a little bit hazy on their adoption numbers and download numbers by claiming downloads or customer accounts as users, when often those accounts can be dormant or empty.
I think I'm trying to remember. It's funny. In the numbers cited by Microsoft, they're actually citing me. They link to my blog, which is funny. But it's because I said they said they've just passed the 10,000 customer milestone with Azure. So they're saying they have more than 10,000 customers, each of which has some unspecified number of users. So some of those customers might have one or none, like you're saying, or they might have, you know, multiple tens, hundreds, whatever. But that's Microsoft's data. It's not a third-party number. It's them saying that's how many customers we have.
Yeah. Well, let's take a step back. It's been a heck of a week for Microsoft. Its doors came off the Kin phone. Windows 8 is out there. The goal is whether Steve Snofsky wanted to control the message or not. He's now out of control of the message. We've got partner event coming up, which is going to be a huge event for Microsoft. So, MJ, there's only one man at the top of Microsoft, and we all know who that is. What moves in, do you reckon? And the back of all this, I know the PR people are tearing their hair out, but how's the CEO feeling about all this?
I would say... And we haven't had many of these on our podcast, Gavin, but I'd say he's close to chair throwing this week.
I would say he is, yeah.
If there were some shattering glass sound right now, that would be, I think, Steve Ballmer. I don't think he's too happy about this Kin stuff getting out right on the last day of Microsoft's fiscal 2010, which is when that leak happened. And I know he's not happy about the Windows 8, because Microsoft's still trying to sell the heck out of Windows 7, and now they've whetted people's appetite to start talking about Windows 8.
Yeah.
And it also brings up the whole thing, do we have slates, do we not have a slate solution, and all that. So, I think some chairs are being thrown. You?
I'd say chairs are being thrown. If they're not being thrown, they're being gripped very firmly.
Yes.
Let's see, we've got on the Bomber Index, chair throwing isn't an official category, but I think we'll insert it as kind of a, as our own. But we have frustrated, intense, all business, victorious, and monkey boy. I've got to say, we're talking frustrated this week, wouldn't you say?
I agree. Yep, I do agree. And, you know, we're going into a period when Ballmer really has to be on message and on point, because now we're coming into Microsoft summer conference season. So they have the partner show, then they have their big MGX event, you know, which is their giant global sales event that they have. And he's always like jumping around. That's where the whole monkey boy thing happened, I think. Then we've got the financial analyst meeting coming up, where he has to, you know, spend a day talking to Wall Street and convincing them why they should raise Microsoft stock price. Ballmer's got a lot on his plate right now, with a lot of balls in the air.
I won't go there.
Yes, but don't go there.
he's definitely going to have to brass it out. Looking back at the previous year's earnings, at least until March, that Microsoft was down in a number of, well, it was down in its client group, I believe, and it was either flat or only growing single figures in other areas. So they've had their work cut out in a year that's supposed to be what they call a year of large product launches for them. So it'll be interesting to see how the financial year finally closed. It closed yesterday, so we'll get a sense of whether it's done very well, especially after, you know, the Windows 7 has been pushed pretty hard as well. But yeah, I think frustrated to the point of gripping the back of a few chairs very firmly in his office at Redmond.
I'd like to see those fingerprints embedded in those chairs. Well, Gavin, I think that brings to a close another episode of Microbyte.
It does indeed. My name's Gavin Clark. I'm software editor for The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, editor of the All About Microsoft blog. And this has been Microbyte, brought to you by the people who bite the hand that feeds IT.